Welcome to the Grateful Shows podcast, exploring the world of Grateful Dead live shows through history, philosophy, fiction, and poetic meditations. I'm your guide, host, and author, J.Y. Pod, asking you to join me as we take a step back. This edition of the Grateful Shows podcast takes us back to May 10th, 1980, a Saturday night at the Civic Center in Hartford, Connecticut. We'll do the first set this episode, and then feel free to join us next episode for the second set. Shall we go? Grateful Shows Tour Book Number 1, Show Number 5. A Meditation on the Hartford Civic Center, Hartford, Connecticut. Friday, May 10th, 1980. The Jerry Wailers. Set 1. Minglewood. In 1978, it snowed so hard that the Civic Center roof did cave in, ushering in a 3-year moratorium on Hartford shows. There's never been a better chance than right now to hit a lyrically relevant Brown-Eyed Women or a Samson and Delilah, but no one expects that as an opener. Instead, Bob begins the show with that harbinger of greatness, C5877-122-78, 12:30, 79, etc. A fiery Minglewood that calls forth the fireworks crew. Shots fired, shots consumed. A couple shots of whiskey times two, and the women round here start looking good. Unfortunately, the shout-out eschews the homegrown Hartford fillies in favor of the standard girls and women. Too bad. This version thumps and pumps enough to fill any filly with pride. The solos are competent, the slide has its effect, and the crowd is primed. Now stick the fork in and twist it. A large contingent of both Boston and New York fans is in attendance tonight, each staking their claim to the Nutmeg State. Bob elects to sing the standard Tea for New York City, eliciting a throaty roar from the Big Apple faithful. Round one goes to the Big Apple. Peggy O. Sticking with the current trend, Jerry follows Bob with slower material, ideal for a stroll along the river. A slice of life unfolds in the background. Dog walkers, joggers, and the occasional student ambling to who knows where. However, this song of the South resonates little with these New Englanders. During the era of slavery, Hartford was among the most vociferous abolitionist states. In fact, Harriet Beecher Stowe wrote her landmark novel, Uncle Tom's Cabin, about the horrors of slavery, which may have significantly influenced the outbreak of the American Civil War in this city. That said, please do not confuse the novel with Uncle John's Band, as it may trigger unwanted flashbacks of riding bikes and singing Uncle Tom's Band by the Grateful Dead. The older kids in the neighborhood teased us mercilessly for it, including multiple kickballs bouncing off the old temple, and it took years until high school to truly understand the gravity of our error. Understandably, some southern states took much longer to acknowledge their own mistakes. Mexicali Blues. Moving west again, we find our hero with a bottle and a girl who's just 14. You never know, he could be her tutor, helping the junior high school student with below average grades. And the bottle could be a non-alcoholic refreshment, a situation common in families where wealth exceeds the desire to educate their children. Remember, the pressure to be accepted into a prestigious university begins early. Father is a renowned surgeon, and mother, well, she is a famous surgeon's wife, with plenty of time to catch up on news about her elite circle of friends' children. Mother provided her daughter with the tools to navigate high society, piano lessons, ballet, and culture school. As for academics, you can't force a child to learn what they don't want to know. So they hired a tutor who was pursuing his master's degree in education at a nearby reputable university, Wednesdays from 7:30 to 9:30. Each week, mother provided a small tray of assorted snacks and a soda of their choice, along with an innocent smile. As the weeks passed and conversation took precedence over study time, the dynamic shifted. He, too, felt tremendous pressure to become a lawyer, following in the footsteps of not only his father and grandfather, but also his two older brothers. He wilted along the way and, against their wishes, ultimately chose the path of education, which earned him severe disapproval and virtual ostracism from the family. Despite the near-decade age gap, she listened with compassion and grace, belying her years. Again, our main character wilted in the face of temptation. Longing gazes led to absent hands on each other's knees, tension-relieving neck massages, and finally, a kiss. As for the rest of the story, let's just say that the girl's grades flatlined. And when father caught wind of the situation, the tutor also spent his lifetime running with the Mexicali Blues. Yeah. El Paso. Bob's on a Western hot streak. We can taste dirt and sweat. The sweat is our own. Don't get any strange ideas. But if the sweat were someone else's, we know of a dark-eyed lass, again, slightly on the younger side, whose sweat we've occasionally dabbled in. While it may be grounds for incarceration, we're not the only ones in town trying to maintain control over what we claim is ours. Strangers, brothers, cousins, and fathers, as well as an army of men, are chomping at the bit to fill us with lead. We tried to keep calm, but the combination of heat, whiskey, and the fearless disorientation of misguided love led us to the foul, evil deed that was done. No doubt you would have done the same. We commence a final hasty ride on the wind of hope that we will once again taste the lips of our love. Eventually, the brothers, cousins, fathers, cowboys, and suave strangers' desire for blood prevails. As we fade away with the final kiss of death on our lips, we resist spitting out a final dagger-like comment toward our antagonist. Y tu madre wouldn't be the best choice as far as famous last words go. Our poor corpse doesn't deserve the abuse. Besides, we aren't native Spanish speakers. Imagine ending your life on a grammatical error. Althea. Jerry, please release us from the hot, dusty West into at least a Shakespearean or mythological realm. We crave lush gardens, fragrant flowers, and some goddamn shade. With cracked lips, we look like a dried-up El Paso riverbed. Pleasantries in the cool English countryside will do. And wouldn't you know, Althea has a palatial gazebo overlooking a lily-covered pond, but she is no Monet. She frolics with the frogs, goldfish, ducks, and water bugs in the pond, dirtying her dress in the process. Or she once did as a child. She is soon to be married off to the son of a wealthy acquaintance. He is much older than she, ugly, and not very nice to boot. That said, it is a match made in heaven, because against all odds, when they are together, she drifts into a painless world bereft of a past or future, a consciousness so vivid that her body becomes ether-like, allowing her to inhabit a perfect dreamscape. Content and immobile, the night comes in an instant. When they must part, she is left with little recollection of the time spent together, only an intense desire to repeat the process. Her life hinges on the next liaison, when the feeling of oneness with all living things returns and the world again washes away as they peer over the edge of infinity. Ensuing waves of pleasure flush any shame or guilt from her system. She agrees to the union. They are deemed compatible. Both families are pleased with the arrangements. United, they entwine and devour each other's habits, their alliance a single money-making entity. While this arrangement is highly profitable for their respective families, it eventually leads to ruin. A jarring explosion in the civic center shatters their world without warning. Take solace, he of explosions. This union was doomed before it even began. Today, the garden pond is fetid, choked with weeds. The once fancy gazebo is in ruins. All that is left are a few insect-riddled pillars, pockmarked by scabs of peeled paint. A car drives by, and the young girl in the back seat, looking out the window, imagines herself in a white cotton dress, spending the rest of her days with her love, drinking tea, and doing nothing because she can, beneath a structure that had seen better days. A disturbance in the crowd, Bob addresses them. Listen, you folks down in front, take it easy, and don't squash each other like bugs, okay? Passenger. Then don't unleash a smoker like Passenger, you big lug. Co-vocals with Bob and Brent are definitely more intense than those with Donna. The sound is tighter, more focused, and electronically charged, proving there is no looking back in the rearview mirror of time. Brent deals on the keyboard. Jerry shreds as usual, his guitar crying out like Whales and the Wailers, two critical parts of the Connecticut economy in the past. This passenger is holding on for dear life, as if Cowboy Neil himself is at the wheel. We read about it, but how about living it? He takes blind curves with abandon while talking a blue streak, eyes rarely on the road. Crossing in and out, up and down, our vehicle is immune to collisions. We should have died 100 times during that solo alone. There are no brakes, no roads, and no car. Just a white-knuckled ride on pure white lightning, hurtling through time, eager to get to the next song as quickly as possible. Upon arrival, and while waiting, we'll wonder why we rushed in the first place. Far from me. Yeah, all that way just to get a far from me, you snicker. Perhaps. Passenger did us dirty. It plastered the crowd until they became part of the stucco and are now permanent fixtures embedded at the front of the stage. A few actually penetrated the stage to dance beneath it. Talk about an obscured view. Would somebody be so kind as to let them out by the end of this tune? Link arms and send in a rescue unit. There must be a way to penetrate the wall without damaging the structure. Remember, these captives are not only inside the stage, but also trapped in a separate dimension. A hero is found, a 16-year-old from Waterbury attending his first show. His purity means he will not be overwhelmed by the moment. Besides, if anything bad happens, his divorced mother believes he's over at a friend's house, so she'll call there first. The real story is, a fellow busboy at the diner gifted him an extra ticket. "Enjoy yourself. Maybe we'll meet up," he said. They didn't. With a cigarette in his mouth to ward off evil, he dives in and releases the captives one by one before the song ends. They are thankful, if not dazed. At least they didn't miss anything. The Waterbury boy is a legend. The sea of humanity parts to give him space up front for the remainder of the show and presumably every time the band plays Hartford. Lost Sailor. Bob's big opus, The Lost Sailor. It got pretty scary going over the Glens Falls. Hopefully tonight's visions are more benign. Jesus Christ, this is already the 8th song of the set. Where does the time go? Are we once again lost in the mist like the lost sailor himself? A more relevant question is whether the directionless life of a nomad is as tragic as believed. The idea of being guided by the stars, living off the land until nature dictates that you move on, and creating a new backstory and identity for each situation sounds quite inviting. Bob riffs on the price of freedom. A price high enough to overcome a structure established by those who also wish to be free, yet remain bound to rules of their own making. They see duty to one society as an absolute requirement for that society to function. However, excessive drifting and dreaming lead to an unstructured world filled with lawlessness, laziness, conflict, and irresponsibility. Those who still believe the rules don't apply to them and are willing to pay that price, please walk across the bridge to the following selection. You are provided with a rickety guitar riff to aid in your passage. Saint of Circumstance. Bob's vision of freedom without consequence moves the needle for more than a few punters this evening. They promise to form a support group to decide how to organize their lives, become more socially active, and to make a mark in the world. That's what they say now. Tomorrow's reality will be quite different. Never trust a man desperate to please in the heat of the moment. The dog star shines eternally, beckoning and blinding us with the enticement of Easy Street. The support group is already in tatters. Admit it, you have no idea what the hell you want to do. No one ever knows. No. Tell it to the armed forces. They'll gladly gobble you up and spit you out, a brand new man bursting with pride for self and country. But if you really want it, there are opportunities for those who have traded their ideals for cheap freedom. In the process, you may encounter an unsavory character or two. Remember, they're all in on the game. Once your name is on the list, you'll remain an easy target. Years later, when you've forgotten your youthful indiscretions, you don't want those old images to resurface. These days, nothing lasts, but nothing's lost. Gamble with your self-respect, and you may very well squander it all. Deal. Returning to the show, Jerry throws down a deal, an acronym lover's dream ending, some much-needed reverie, with Deal, the evening's sole up-tempo Jerry tune. What a ripoff, you mutter. Fret not, my son. The man, and by proxy, the band, is only getting started. Performance-wise, Brent rides shotgun. He's got the map out, beer stashed under the seat, and is on constant lookout for cops and bikini-clad girls in Jeeps. The probability of encountering either is exceptionally low. A toke here, a sip there, a fine way to spend an afternoon out on the road. Might as well gamble with your youth, hope it lands on red, take your winnings, and have a grand old time. The lucky ones will make it back in time to witness Bob, Jerry, and Brent singing their hearts out. Don't you let that deal go down. No shirt, no shoes, no dice. Learn it, know it, live it. End of set. Says Bob. Thank you all. We're going to take a short break and be back in a few minutes, so everybody hang loose. So that does it for the first set. Thank you so much for choosing to spend time with us here at the Grateful Shows podcast. Be sure to tune in for the second set right here on Grateful Shows. See you next set. If this reading of Grateful Shows has given you something to sit with, I'd be glad to have you along for the rest of the ride. You can listen on whatever platform suits you best. The link is in the show notes. And if you'd like to go deeper, the written work behind these readings will be available as a complete tour book upon finishing the tour. Again, the link is below. A short note on Podchaser would mean a great deal at this early stage of the show's life. And if you'd like to receive occasional communication about the writing and what's coming next, the newsletter sign-up is in the show notes too. Thank you so much for listening.